This is Mechanics After Hours.
Welcome, and thank you for tuning in to Rack Addicts After Hours. This is a music and technology podcast, and it's also episode 166. My name is Ben. I'm joined by Pete, as always, and we must first check in with his week. What have you been doing?
Well, I was continuing with the task of trying to put together a, I don't know what you describe it, as a set or performance for the test chamber project.
I've been calling them compositions when I talk about them.
Yeah, I suppose you just say composition.
Mm.
But to that end, as I suggested, I've ordered the Polyhector so that I can load it with all the lovely impulse responses once they become available. I've also been ordering from Clicks and Clocks in Berlin the components I need to build a second Scarab case.
Mm. Is it going to be something like the Scarab Part 2, or is it going to have a different name?
I don't know. Just another appendage to the Scarab, I think.
Scarab leg.
Yeah, or a second Scarab. Mrs. Scarab.
No, you can't...
Can't gender it.
Well, I was going to say you can't spell it backwards and it make anything useful, so it's annoying. Never mind.
Fair enough. There's a name for that, isn't it? I can't remember what it is. Palindrome?
Palindrome, yes. Palindrome, like that's it. Race car or taco cat.
Taco cat.
Yeah, that's a palindrome.
Okay. Yeah, so just more of the same. Just more, lots of gorgeous Urac noodling, which I haven't really done for quite some time.
Oh, that's good stuff. What colour is the Hector, by the way? Is it the pink one or the blue one?
It's black.
Oh, maybe it was only fancy colours in the guitar pedal versions.
I believe in the Urac version, they do possibly a blue and a black.
Huh, interesting.
And in the pedal version, they did a blue and a pink.
Mm-hmm. But of course, such colours wouldn't work for your colour scheme.
No, it has to be black. All black. And there's the cat.
Yes, indeed. Making herself known noisily.
So I just wanted to mention, in the course of me doing my modular noodlings and preparing for the test chamber project, I was looking for a good EXO programming cheat sheet.
Cheat sheet? In what way? Just what visually what the classic patterns look like?
Or? Yes, exactly.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, there are some notable books that have been on sale for quite a number of years. Mm-hmm. I think one of the original ones is from the 80s. You can still purchase them from places like Amazon and so forth. But I was just hunting around the internet, as one does. I came across this particular publication, and I thought it would be interesting to our listeners. Now, this gentleman in question has put together this book, and you can just download the PDF if you wish, and there are facilities to make a donation if you wish, or you can actually order a hard copy from him directly. The book is aimed at pocket operators.
Oh, that's cool.
But it's completely generic.
Yeah.
And will work with any drum machine or MIDI controller where you can perform that type or that style of programming. It's a very comprehensive little book. It prints off in an A5 type format. So
it's
almost
fold it if you like.
Yes, exactly. And it has, I think there's about 90 pages in total.
Oh, wow.
There seems to be a lot. It's all double-sided.
Yeah.
The book is just called Pocket Operations.
Pretty cool.
Anyway, the gentleman's name is Paul Wenzel, and he's from Minneapolis in the USA. And the book can be acquired from https://shittyrecording.studio.
That's amazing.
Let me spell that for you. And shitty recording is spelled, as you might imagine, shittyrecording. Say that again. It is https://shittyrecording.studio.
That is brilliant. Actually, the hard copy looks quite cool. It's a little sort of glossy blue.
Yes.
Yeah, that's great. I really like that.
And it's got a really comprehensive list of all the standard types of patterns for a massive variety of genres. And there's also drum rolls and some blank ones to put your own, if you want to fill in your own patterns as well. So all in all, a very good resource for those interested in drum machine programming.
Brilliant. That's a great find. Awesome.
Other than that, just lots of walking, lots of weight training.
Good stuff.
And starting to pay attention to my diet as well, somewhat. And ever hopeful that this everlasting winter we seem to be in is going to desist and leave us alone.
Well, it was 15 degrees the other day. That's not bad.
And it was quite pleasant today, but I believe we're in for some more cold weather.
Joyous. Well, I must report some success this past week. I don't know if it was last episode or the one before I mentioned that I'd gone all spreadsheet with my coffee science.
Yeah, you had gone slightly introspective on it.
Well, it paid off. On the coffee shelf over there, you can see the White Bag, Curious Roo. I don't know where they're from. I think they're an Australian couple that set it up, but roasted in the UK. Anyway, my partner and I went to one of our favourite coffee shops in Wimbledon and had a filter coffee, and it blew our minds. Smelt of blueberries and tasted of blueberries and other fruity somethings, and it was incredible. So we thought, okay, of course, we've got to have it. We've got to buy it. And maybe 3 or 4 home brews later, we weren't quite to that cafe's standards, but certainly tens of times better than any of the coffees we'd made previously. So the home coffee situation is very good. Then we thought, we'd better get some more before this one runs out. It wasn't on the roaster's website, so we had to go all the way back to the cafe and hope they had stock. And they did, so we bought it all.
All their stock.
Yeah, it was only 2 extra bags, but there's now, yeah, 0.5 kilo of reserve coffee up there, ready to go.
What are you going to do when you run out of this stuff?
Well, in theory, something roasted to a similar degree from the same altitude, from the same region, of the same variety, with the same process, might taste similar. So that will be the thing. Try and find a Colombian natural coffee of light roast and see how we go.
Will your favourite coffee emporium be getting any more stock in?
We'll have to find out. We can keep track of the roaster's website and see if they get another shipment of the green coffee. Fingers crossed. I don't know how long it will take for us to get bored of it. That's the question.
And do you get bored of particular roasts?
No, it happened once, but that had never achieved the levels of deliciousness that we have found ourselves at this time. So we'll see if that's 500 grams or 750 grams of this coffee through, and we'll see how it goes.
How long will this batch that you've got last you?
Let me just check.
What, on your spreadsheet?
Well, no, I just want to see how... I can work it out. Let me find out. Hang on. In theory, a bit under a month. It's not very long now, I think,
no,
about it.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
You're going to start getting a bit jittery, a bit panicky about that.
Well, that's based on our sort of average consumption. Yeah. We'll find out. Yeah, I might start researching similar coffees sooner than I expected, just in case we can't get hold of any more. Do you remember last episode we were talking about having... Well, it might have been last episode. We were talking about having expensive tastes and then needing to buy something and trying to keep those in check.
I think we've had that conversation many times on this podcast.
Well, I succeeded. I kept the tastes in check. I have purchased a basic audio interface.
A basic audio
interface? A basic audio interface of only £99, in fact.
And which one did you plump for?
You're going to have to guess.
At that price.
But what would Ben buy?
What would Ben buy?
Of the three... How long have we known each other? 4, 5 years?
Yeah, something like that.
Of that time that we've known each other, what can you predict about my tastes in audio interfaces and the fact that I'm struggling with the unfortunate privilege of having used some very nice gear in the past?
I know what you're saying, but I'm going by the price you've quoted.
There's a lot in that kind of sort of 100-ish quid area.
Is there?
And I could have had a good deal as well.
Yeah,
because it was a good deal. It was cheaper than everywhere else. Thank you, Scan.
Okay. Traitor. Well, I mean, immediately I thought of the Scarlett Solo, but I suspect it's not that.
Yes, your instincts were correct. It wasn't one of those.
I think you're going to have to tell me. I am struggling to think of a unit. Is it just a single input channel?
Yeah. It's the Universal Audio Vault 1.
And it comes in at that price?
99 squids. This was quite interesting about it. It's just going back to, remember being a beginner and researching about gear yourself? What a weird concept. Anyway, all of the kind of reviews for those kind of things use all the exact same language, and even some of them will go, all the interfaces at this range basically sound the same, apart from the occasional ones that have like the Air button on the Scarlett ones, or the Vintage button, or the 4K button. They do something, but they all kind of sound the same. So it's more about build quality and if you like the IO or whatever.
And what are the A to D converters like on that particular unit?
Again, the consensus is you probably won't be able to notice.
Fair enough.
Not between interfaces of that budget, anyway.
And have you used it in anger yet?
No, because it arrives on Thursday.
Okay. That's why I was scanning around the room to see where it was.
Yeah, you yet. But the purpose is purely for plugging in a guitar, because I do have my Zoom H5, which works as an audio interface, but you can't plug in an unbalanced mono input, at least.
But you can with this.
Yeah. got the old instrument button. So that's going to be interesting. We'll see what the experience is like. I have had three different Focusrite interfaces over the years, and they've always been solid, but I just didn't feel like having a red box around for whatever reason.
Well, fair enough. And if the Universal Audio comes in at that price, why not?
Not much to say for my week, but my weekend was quite interesting. Well, I'm going to talk about the Saturday anyway, and we're going to talk about the Test Chamber project at Q121 again. I made two YouTube tutorials, like I always used to do back in the day, for the use of these impulse responses for people that might not have done this kind of thing before. I'm quite pleased with them. I think they're good, but that's not what's important here. What happened was, I sat down at that desk yonder at about 8:30, and then it was 4 p.m.
Just like that?
Yeah. When you read books about work or productivity or all this kind of things, what something that comes up a lot is flow.
I was going to say.
The state of flow. And I just said never. It's not never. It's happened to me maybe three times. It's such an uncommon state to find myself in. It was really quite magical. And yeah, it was productive. But the obvious time I spent in a state of flow was one thing, but what I found very satisfying when I stopped to think about what I'd been doing all day, so that I'd actually used all of the skills that I've accumulated over the past decade, because I can say decade, because I'm older than a decade now. I have a list. I wrote a list because... I was kind of proud of myself. I wanted to... I think it helped me gain a bit of perspective. A lot of the time... thinking about a career and the future, and you worry that you don't have the right skills or if you're stuck where you are or whatever. I was just very pleased that all the skills that I'd accumulated through my own self-directed learning has led me through a few jobs and to a point where the combination of skills I feel is fairly unique. I don't know. I'm rambling. It's not eloquent. Anyway.
Yet another introspective.
Yeah, a little bit.
So that's the coffee and now some...
Yeah, just thinking a lot.
Tutorial, what would you call it? Manufacturing a tutorial?
Yeah.
Formulating a tutorial?
Indeed.
Generating a tutorial? Creating a tutorial?
Creating probably works best, yeah. But anyway, that would have... The skills that I had to deploy for such a thing, recording, using recording software, making YouTube videos as a broad category, editing video, motion graphic animation, voiceover recording, voiceover production, voiceover performance, video hosting, ambisonics and surround sound knowledge, synthesis, probably a few other things. But it's all come together. It's quite an interesting focus point.
Sounds like something that would come out your CV.
Yeah, well, it basically was my CV thrown at an editing program. I'm pleased with them, and I've got to make two more, which is daunting.
So there will be a total of four at the end of this.
Indeed. So three of them will be the same, but in different DAWs. So that's just how to use the IRs that we will have on the Test Chamber website, Logic Pro, Ableton Live, and Reaper, because it's free. I didn't want to subject myself to Cubase.
Why not?
It's too many things. I had to learn some Ableton stuff and remind myself how Reaper works, and I think that was a bit too much program hopping for my small brain. Yeah, and then the fourth video is showing you how you can also use the ambisonic files that are also available. So those are 4-channel polywavs, how you can use those and a free plugin from Deer VR to change the kind of recording perspective of them. We did all of the recordings for phase one with the microphone pointing, or the perspective of the microphone pointing towards the long wall of the return circuit. And you can use this plugin to make it point downhill or uphill or backwards, whatever you want. So if you wanted your virtual audience to have a speaker in front of them and behind them instead of left and right, that is possible.
It's going to make the choices complicated.
Yes. But there is a nice, easy way to preview them on the website, so hopefully you can narrow down selections fairly fast.
Yeah, it's all got to be decided in the context of your performance.
Yes. But hopefully you can have an idea of what you want before stage two. That's the whole point. Anyway, speaking of which, Wednesday, that's tomorrow for us, but earlier this week for you, we will be, I suppose, holding a screening at the Modular Cafe of the Phase 1 video, 20 whole minutes of goodness about the project, and it'll be on the ModCaf YouTube channel, youtube.com/C/ModCaf, that's M-O-D-C-A-F, and you too can see what we've been up to.
And when exactly can our listeners see that particular video?
By the time this podcast is up.
Excellent.
Yes, listeners, you will be able to watch these videos and also peruse the website and the impulse responses and samples we've recorded now. So YouTube, youtube.com/C/ModCaf, And you can finally visit our website. Let me give you that URL or URL. modcaf.org.uk/testchamber. You'll be able to take a peruse, have a peruse, whatever. There's also, finally, a Modular Cafe webpage.
Excellent.
No dates yet. We're getting there. But it does look pretty excellent. The time is now. It's the news! And another edition of What Has Behringer Done Now? Well, I'll tell you what they've done. They've teased a Juno 60.
I saw that.
Although, actually, it's the Neptune 80. Does that mean it's 8 voices?
I wouldn't be surprised. It's a sort of logical thing to do. The question we were all asking ourselves in the shop is, why have they done this when they've got the DeepMind?
For money.
Yeah, I suppose so.
But yes, it is 8 voices. I've just read that. It's an interesting question. I would answer with, for the same reason they made the vocoder, just because it's a replica of the vintage thing, rather than it actually being good.
Yes. So they're pandering to those sort of pseudo collectors that like collecting Behringer equipment.
Yeah, and it does certainly have an appeal.
And it's got the aesthetic of the Juno, but it's in quite a small chassis.
Yeah, it's quite shallow. Have they made anything in this kind of chassis before?
Well, I was thinking possibly the vocoder that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, maybe that's where I'm recognizing it from. Let's have a dig. Yes, indeed. Yep, it is a very similar looking chassis to the vocoder, though potentially... Yeah, I think it's wider, which I imagine isn't too much of a trouble to do, since you're going to have to change where all the cutouts are for faders and all that kind of stuff anyway. But yeah, in terms of the bending, it looks all the same.
I know this is only a tease, but have they suggested a retail price for this thing?
Let's have a look. We will target such and such a price. No, still to be announced, unfortunately. There's a fairly reassuring-looking main circuit board in there, which is quite nice.
Okay. I still will be hanging on to my DeepMind 12.
No, in many, many ways, that's a better proposition. The only advantage will be aesthetic here.
I'm not fussed about the aesthetics.
Yeah.
It's what it sounds like. If they've gone for the authentic sound, there's going to be nothing but a chorus in there.
Yep, it's a BBD chorus, and...
And their chorus isn't that great.
No, it kind of gets somewhere there, but it's not quite swirly and swooshy enough for me.
It's not like the real thing.
No.
Because they already use it as a guitar pedal, don't they?
Yeah.
Hmm.
They've also, where are we at on these? The classic Behringer timeline, tease, announce, in production or whatever that we did last week. But the 101 low-pass filter Moogafoga clone, as well as the 103, which is the phaser, those are happening one day, apparently, maybe, if you care. There are those. Now, here's something slightly more interesting. A polyphonic tube synthesizer. Remember you saw that Kickstarter for the other Tube Matron, which made lots of flashing? That was a fluorescent tube synthesizer.
Yes.
Wasn't it? Yeah. But this is slightly more standard tube synthesizer. 4 voices, I believe. And, I mean, I'll show you how it sounds in a little bit, but... What I love is, for the kind of display that will tell you some values or settings or whatever, it's got Nixie tubes in it, as well as a tube for each voice, it looks like. Let's hear a bit of a sample. FM and overdrive. No word on price or availability, but it is called the Eternal Engine Mars. And it looks pretty cool.
Where does it come from? Who makes it?
I think Eternal Engine is the brand, and it seems they have a duophonic tube synth already. Let's snoop around their website. Ah, yes, their duophonic tube synth looks epic and is called The Apparatus. Ooh, potentially a Russian production, which would make sense because Russia has always been tubey for some reason. Are they the only country still manufacturing new vacuum tubes?
I don't know what they're manufacturing these days.
Yeah, who knows? Either way, I'm going to show you this in a sec because it's awesome. Yes, it is indeed a Russian company. Look at this.
Okay, very it's a old vibe. School. Are they actually based in Russia?
Seems so.
Well, that'll make it sticky to get hold of one of those then.
Potentially, yes. I wonder if they have an order page. Let's see what they suggest. Each kit, or the kit, does that mean you have to build it? Either way, they give you a spare set of tubes. Ooh, their duophonic one is $1,999. You have to contact them for purchase. There we are. Alas, that is it for news, although there is a new Yamaha stage piano, if you're interested in that kind of thing. Which I don't think I am, unfortunately. It's time for the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. And Pete, I'm going to go first, if I may, because it's time for the second ever of mine, Periphery Marathon. Hooray! So that will be my favourite band. They've released a new album. The vinyl is on its way to me. And that must mean that I subject myself to the 7+ hours of their entire discography, excluding the live album, because it's terrible. So, the new album is called Periphery 5, Gent is Not a Genre. And it's pretty great so far. And yeah, it'll be the day after this episode comes out, potentially. I'll be sitting through the entire thing, and hopefully enjoying it again. I did this last time when the fourth album came out. I think Sam and James came and listened to it with me. Actually, my partner was there as well. She made it through the entire thing. Very good. Anyway, that'll be my weekend. Pete, what have you got for us?
Right. Are you into Egyptology at all?
No, but I do remember the book.
Fair enough.
The Egyptology book with a giant gemstone on the front that everybody went, ooh, I want that book, because it looked very exciting. Anyway.
Have you been following the news about the
no.
void found
don't
in
don't know
the,
what it is.
The...
I don't follow news.
Oh,
what,
yes. What? I forgot.
Do tell.
Anyway, well, if you have an interest in all things Egyptian, ancient Egyptian.
Certainly ancient history is much more interesting to me than more modern stuff.
This particular YouTube channel will be possibly of an interest to you. And I was also wondering whether you'd, and you've confirmed that you haven't, heard the news about the void that was discovered in the Great Pyramid. It was certainly announced. It was discovered, I think, a year or so ago by an international team using cosmic rays to detect voids within the pyramid.
Oh my, that seems really extra, as the kids would say.
Yeah.
Cosmic rays. How did they manage that?
Installing various sensors in various internal and external locations around the Great Pyramid.
Yeah.
And those sensors are able to pick up cosmic rays. And as you may or may not be aware, cosmic rays have the ability to pass through matter.
Yes, indeed.
But they do have the tendency to be able to reveal things like voids in rock. So they used that and they discovered a void above the Great Gallery, which no one knew existed. And it was confirmed, or part of it was confirmed, a week or so ago after they'd put a very small endoscopes through cracks and found this void, which alludes to the fact that there's way more to be discovered potentially inside. So a lot of excitement. Anyway, prior to that, I had been watching quite a few episodes from this YouTube channel called History for Granite. And it's, I believe the gentleman is possibly a amateur. It doesn't really say, but it's not one of these people sort of getting into strange kind of conspiracies about, you know, aliens made them all this sort of stuff. It's practical examination of how he thinks it was built, looking at evidence, quoting from other researchers and so forth. The channel describes itself as investigating the architecture of ancient Egypt to reveal the secrets held since antiquity. Emphasis on the 3rd, 4th, 5th and 6th dynasty pyramid complexes. All theories and speculation are backed with evidence written in stone. Egyptology will never be the same. Do you take your history for granite?
Is that a Mick and Rorty?
Yes.
Is that a Rick and Morty reference?
Bit of a pun there. But yes, it's quite interesting. It can get quite deep in parts, but it's reasonably watchable. The videos are relatively short. And if you're interested in ancient Egypt, it will be just what you're looking for. So that's my multimedia recommendation for this week, the YouTube channel entitled History for Granite.
Good stuff. As always, you wonderful audience listeners, you, thank you for tuning in. And because this is our podcast, I can plug the things that we're doing. Please go to youtube.com/C/modcaf and modcaf.org.uk/testchamber to see the biggest project I've ever worked on in my entire life. Thank you so much, and farewell.